I'm Grant.
And this is
Whiskers.
We share knowledge regarding SeaQuest.
Hello, everybody. Hello, dear.
Hello.
I have some stories to tell.
Yeah?
I have news.
You have news.
So we ended our last episode with me wondering, is there a Lieutenant James Brody sexual assault arc?
Oh.
Is this a thing? Or is this one of those strange patterns you see in the mist with, you know, the flawed human brain?
Mm-hmm.
So I went looking to see if it's possible for one to contact Mr. Carlton Eastlake and ask him such a question. And it turns out it is possible.
Oh.
And so the answer to the question, is there a Lieutenant James Brody sex assault arc?
Mm-hmm.
Is maybe. I don't really recall what I was thinking at the time. So the results are inconclusive.
I mean, it's been a while.
It's been a while. Like, it's certainly possible, but I don't know. I really can't say. This is basically how it went down.
Yeah. Well, that's some good research.
Yeah, I did my best on that point, and I did not get a definite answer. But I did get a fun story.
Yeah.
I got a fun story out of the search. So the SeaQuest cast in sunny Orlando, Florida, had a psychic they liked. They liked to have a psychic.
Why?
You know, for psychic things. She'd like come on set and chat with them.
So this was in Florida. So this was season 2 or 3.
The story I have in particular is season 2. I don't know if she stuck around for the third season.
Because I'm like, did this inspire Wendy Smith?
And so at a certain point near the end of the season, one of the cast walks up to Carlton Eastlake and says, "Hey, the script you wrote, Splashdown, there's a bit where Dr. Smith can't tell if the aliens are lying. And our psychic that we consult with says that's not how it works. You can't be blocked like that. They can always tell if you're lying." And so Mr. Carlton Eastlake, supervising producer and writer of that episode, said, "Well, the thing you have to remember is your psychic has never left the planet Earth."
Ah.
She doesn't know these aliens. Their brains are different like that.
Yeah.
And this satisfied the cast member.
I mean, oh yeah, aliens. Their brains are different. This
yeah.
makes sense.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get okay. Yeah,
aliens,
sure.
Aliens, yeah.
Also, it is fiction.
That too. We can do whatever the fuck we want.
So
I like that we were really worried about being like method with the whole psychic thing.
Mm-hmm. So that is a story that was shared with me by Carlton Eastlake. And if you would like to get some more of his writing, as we are running out of SeaQuest to talk about, you can read the recent novel Monkey Business.
Oh.
This is a novel he wrote inspired by a lot of his career as a television producer, including SeaQuest, but also including, you know, a dozen other shows. He's had a whole career. It is about a TV writer on location in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, SeaQuest is obviously in the mix, but it's a big mix. And also, you know, fiction. Don't take it as a documentary with the names changed.
Yeah.
But let me continue to read the blurb from CarltonEastlake.com. Debut novel about a conflicted TV writer on location in Florida who becomes obsessed with a mysterious woman at a nightclub when she upends everything he thought he understood about life, limerence, bonded love, power, creativity, paintball combat, what psychologists and philosophers refer to as the hard problem of human consciousness.
Paintball combat?
Paintball combat.
Okay.
Monkeys and parrots do play a role, as does Chairman Mao and, in a cameo appearance, NASA.
I'm so glad NASA's there.
There is one episode in the book about this character getting a phone call from like the president of the network that says, "Oh yeah, love what you did, and I love that you made the car blue. It's got to be blue when you shoot this script, right? Be sure to keep that." And then gets a call from someone else who says, "Like, okay, great, but we need to make the car yellow." And he says, "Well, I don't know, man. I just got a phone call from the president of the network. Says it's got to be blue. Like, yeah, he doesn't know what he's talking about. I'm taking his job next week anyway. It's got to be yellow. And then he gets a third phone call. It says the car's got to be a different color. And he's like, well, the current president and the incoming president both disagree. Like, no, they're losers. I'm taking their jobs. They already know this.
Everyone's tried.
This is apparently a dramatization of a real thing that happened to Carlton Eastlake on a non-Sequest show. That's not a Sequest story, but it is a real story.
It's gotta be blue.
That's how TV is sometimes.
Yeah.
But he's not the writer we're here to talk about.
He's not?
Well, he's not the writer of the episode we're here to talk about.
Oh, okay.
In our 52nd episode, a full year of Whiskers.
A full year!
If you don't count the 6 bonus episodes we've done and the some other weeks beside.
Whatever.
But if one were to listen to one Whiskers a week, this would be the year mark.
This is it.
This is why I count 52 as the big anniversary and not 50, even though it's a much rounder number.
Yeah.
Or the actual calendar anniversary, for that matter.
Yeah.
But yes, big number 52 is Sequest Season 3, Episode 8, Equilibrium, written by Naren Shankar and Javier Grillo Markswatch, directed by Anson Williams. Now, normally, I would talk about all of their previous Sequest credits because they're returners. I will save time by saying it's the Brainlock team. They're back from 2 weeks ago.
There we go.
There you go.
There you go. So this episode starts.
Oh, yeah.
With a sea of dead orcas.
Your first thought upon the cold open beginning should be, oh, fuck.
Yeah, because Jesus fuck.
There's so many. And the little dee-dee-dee-dee tells us that we're in a Yu-Gi-Oh! Biohazard quarantine in the Sargasso Sea.
You don't say.
Now, hey, we've been in the Sargasso Sea before.
We have.
It's been a long time.
This is where there was that hurricane that Lucas and Krieg and Ford and Westphalen were all trapped in their little dinghy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And all the little French children suffocating down below.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what was that episode called?
Bad Water.
And what's happening in this episode?
There's bad water.
There's bad water. Is this a coincidence? Or is it just my weird monkey brain?
Well, Westphalen did say, like, nothing can, like, really survive in the Sargasso Sea. Like, you can't fish there.
She did not know how right she is.
So, like, I guess she predicted the future of, like, well, fuck.
Because
Darwin's gonna get electrocuted, there's no fish to get, the orcas are all gonna die.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And two French chaperones on this field trip are falling madly in love with each other as they die.
Death brings you together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So on the bridge of the Sequest is Captain Hudson, it's Ford, it's Lucas, and they are telling us about this synthetic microbe.
Yes.
That has mutated into this whale-killing plague.
And guess what? It's Firma 21,
mm-hmm.
which is a very important thing to know because it's connected to the Sequest.
That's right. There is a Sequest mission 12 years earlier, back in the old days, back in the Bridger days, where they spread this synthetic microbe in order to promote life and health and development of this area of the sea. But it has recently severely mutated and is now whale poison, just destroying everything.
Yeah. It's not going well.
It's a big whoopsie. They did a whoopsie.
And they're like, well, fuck, this is our fault.
Mm-hmm,
I mean, like,
mm-hmm.
not your fault, Hudson. You weren't here, but, like, this is our fault. It's your boat now. Mm-hmm. So it's your fault. You did it.
Which of us are culpable depends on whether this was a season one or season two mission. But
can we blame this on Brody? He's dead.
Mm-hmm.
His fault?
There is no point in this episode where Tony Piccolo throws up in his hands and says, ah, that was like 2 months before me. Can't blame this on me.
I wasn't here. I wasn't here. Not here yet. Not my problem.
But I like to imagine it happened when the camera wasn't nearby.
Yeah. Everyone trying to figure out, like, I was on leave during that week, right? So, like, they can't, like, you know, if we get sued, like, I can't be a part of that lawsuit. I wasn't here.
Mm-hmm.
So Lucas, beating Lucas, is mm-hmm. like, I will solve this problem. I am going to work
as the only scientist in the UEO Navy.
Yes.
Yes.
So he is going to work on creating some enzymes mm-hmm. and stuff to, you know,
to mutate it again into something harmless.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so he's like, okay, great, work on that. But before we can start working on that, some ships are heading in
mm-hmm.
that hail them.
A fleet of 3 submarines.
Yes.
And they are hailed and they bring up the video call of guest star Roy Scheider. Now, Roy Scheider, you might recognize from Jaws. 2010, the year we made Contact.
Yeah, yeah.
A number of films.
That, like, helicopter movie.
Blue Thunder.
Yeah.
Night Game.
You know, the it's big
Bridger!
Ones.
It's Bridger! I know him! He's my friend!
Except right now he's not, because he is stopping them. He is not going to allow them to pass.
Yeah, he says straight up, I'm not letting you go any farther.
He's pulling a Gandalf.
He's instituting a blockade.
Mm-hmm. And the looks... The looks between everyone's faces to
mm-hmm,
him.
Mm-hmm.
Lucas.
Because our former collective daddy is now our antagonist.
Yes.
What does this mean? What does this do?
And this is also the first time Lucas has seen Bridger since he left.
Yes.
Absolutely. It becomes very clear very soon that he has not talked to this man at all.
So once there's some moments for the weight of this to set in on the viewer, we go to the opening credits and come back to Bridger arriving on a shuttlecraft.
Yes. And Hudson and Lucas are there to greet him. And he you know, comes off and he's all like, well, Lucas, mm-hmm. looking at him in uniform.
That's Ensign Walenchek now. Yes, I see.
Except... More like,
yeah, I see.
Not happy. Not happy. Not the warm papa welcome you want.
I love that in like 3 minutes, he's like, hey, Tony, officer's exam. Love that for you, buddy. But when it's Lucas, like, oh, no, this is bad.
This is
the bad future.
You have disappointed me. Jesus fuck. And, you know, before he can even like say anything else nice to Lucas, he's like, hey. This young lady scientist here I'd like to introduce you to.
They just get younger and younger with this guy. Hey! So Dr. Johansson here is played by famed anime dub actor Peggy O'Neill, who we previously saw as Dr. Kaufman in Something in the Air, the Pandora's Box demon episode.
Yeah.
Do you think this is the same character?
No.
Good, because she super died. She's so dead. This is also not the same character as Brody's mom's friend who got murdered in that creek. She also played.
What if she is just a ghost?
Now, Dr. Johansson might be a ghost. This is an open possibility.
Bridger is like, here's the deal. I want to know what your intentions are mm-hmm, with this mm-hmm. ocean.
He just gives the wonderful, like, dadly performance of, he's not mad, he's just disappointed.
He's so disappointed. It is so soul-crushing to Lucas.
It's devastating.
It's like, oh god. Hudson is like, fine, we'll tell you stuff,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
but your lady friend here doesn't have clearance, so back on the boat with her.
So she just goes back to the shuttle and I guess sits on her hands for a while.
Yeah.
He gets a tour. Well, he doesn't really need a tour. He built this fucking boat. But he gets welcome to the bridge and...
Well, before we do that, yeah. As they're walking towards the bridge, he's like, you know, Lucas, what the hell made you sign up?
Mm-hmm.
He's, I had to, you know, give Hudson a reason to keep me around. And Hudson is like, and he's done a wonderful job.
Yes, yes.
Hudson is so kind to Lucas in this entire episode because he knows immediately
mm-hmm,
that he is
mm-hmm.
being judged by his daddy. It is not well for this boy. And
what's worse than being abandoned? Dad comes back. That's what's worse.
Yeah. And it's like, man, never thought you'd be career Navy. But hey, Piccolo! Hey, so glad. So glad you're going for the Officer Ford.
Moving
yes.
up in the world.
Hello, everyone.
Hey, where's Brody? Where'd Jim go? What's up? And everyone's like, oh, yeah. Remember that international incident a week ago?
Yeah. That was him. He died.
He died. And, like, the metatextuality that I think runs throughout this episode really starts here, where he's like, wow, things have changed aboard SeaQuest, practically looks directly at the camera.
No, it's really weird, this line, though, because he's like, wow, I guess a lot more has changed than the dress code. And I'm mm-hmm. like, they're wearing the same jumpsuits. It's just like three people have the option of shorts. It's the same jumpsuit you had in season two. I don't understand.
They dress him in very season one colors. He's not in a uniform at all, but like the khaki is suggesting it.
Yes.
Yeah.
But like, you were here for this uniform.
He never wore the blue jumpsuit. That's not true. He rarely wore it.
He wore the blue jumpsuit. Yeah. We had the blue jumpsuit in season two,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
which makes it weird that the blue jumpsuit is still there 10 years later.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
It was, like, season two to season three. So like, it's the same fucking jumpsuit.
Mm-hmm. I feel like he wore his other options a whole lot more often than Hudson does.
Yes, but he definitely wore it.
But he did wear it once in a while, yeah.
Yeah. There's plenty of him in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's when he had his beard. It was beard and jumpsuit. Like, yeah.
The beard came and went.
I just think that's a weird line. So it's like, it's aside from, like, Henderson and Freddie and Tony sometimes wear shorts.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same. And I guess, like, there's a tank top option.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, no one was wearing that, I don't think, in this scene.
Look, a number of crew members asked with written permission to get the guns out, and Hudson didn't understand that they were speaking metaphorically.
Oh.
Just like, hell yeah, rubber stamp thumbs up to that. Like, oh, you meant sleeves. Nuts.
Dang it.
Yeah.
Okay. So over in the wardroom, they all go to have a nice little chat mm-hmm. about what's going on out in the Orca graveyard.
The Sargasso Sea.
And Bridger has been apparently observing and researching this all a lot, and according to his calculations, the outbreak is ready to collapse. If it's left alone, it's going to burn out, it'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. If it's going to take care of itself, all we have to do is, like, let it. Don't touch it. Don't poke it. It's fine.
They're all there, and, like, McGaff is on the vid screen. And Hudson's like, yo, Walenchek, what do you think?
Do you concur, actual naval scientist here for the Navy?
And Lucas has to decide if he's going to say what he thinks or if he's going to agree with his surrogate dad.
He does not agree.
He's not. It takes a moment.
He stands up. He objects. He points out that Bridger's projection is based on an untested assumption that the rate of mutation will be constant. Mm-hmm. They have no guarantee of that. So therefore, they need to take a proactive step, because who knows what might happen. He has designed an enzyme to spread through this area of the sea in order to kill the infection.
It'll destroy it. It'll be great. Mm-hmm. Everything will be perfect.
And Bridger says, what the fuck is this bullshit? You're just gonna make the same mistake we did 12 years ago to cause this problem.
Yeah. Lucas is like, no, an active solution is needed to this problem. And he's like, well, Hudson knows all about active solutions, don't you?
Yeah, yeah.
And then Hudson's like, so what he's talking about?
Yeah. And this is back to, like, 2012.
Uh-huh.
This was before Lucas was in Stanford. This is how old this backstory is.
Mm-hmm. And so there was this virus
mm-hmm.
That was killing everything.
Yeah.
And so they decided
similar situation.
Yes. To laser it. Do a laser into this epicenter.
Yeah, like a laser X-ray bomb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that killed every organism in 20 miles.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
it, like, destroyed it, but also everything and no one lived there again.
But at what cost, right? Totally cauterized the entire environment. And yeah, he basically killed a whole town.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To save the world, I guess. Hudson's not, you know, I would say gung-ho cheery about it, but he also is like, this is what happened, and it's
yeah.
what needed to happen at the time.
He's the duty guy. He uh-huh. is the duty guy. He's the grim, hard decisions. He, like, think back to Chains of Command.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And McGath's like, you know what, we're gonna go with Lucas's recommendation. Sorry, Bridger. Sorry. But
I've weighed your proposals, and yeah.
And Bridger's like, well, fine, then you're gonna have to go through me and my chair.
He does not quote the miracle worker, but he does in spirit.
Because he says, me and my ships.
Yes, yes.
Yes. And McGath's like, oh, but Bridger, we're all on the same side. Not anymore.
Yeah.
As he looks at Lucas.
Mm-hmm. And McGath is just on the video call like, hey, Captain Hudson, you have your orders. Like, oh, lines are being drawn.
And so Hudson, like, leaves. And it leaves Lucas and Bridger there.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you know, I never thought we'd see this day, Lucas.
He says, as Lucas stands up from seated and comes around, and I don't know how clear this was on broadcast, but we are, of course, watching this on the recent Blu-ray release available at Menards, but not yes. necessarily your local Menards.
And elsewhere.
And elsewhere.
I just want Menards to be like, why is everyone buying this random ass show? Like, the sales of this are insane!
Look, we have a handful of running gags, and I aim to recognize so them, to support and continue them.
What I need is everyone to go to their local Menards and mm-hmm. check to see if they have Sequest, and if they don't, I need you to ask them to stock it.
I was told it's available at certain Menards locations. I would like you to be one of those Menards locations.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Can you please order that for me? I'd love to have it.
Imagine Menards does their, like, everything that fits in the paper bag sale.
Yeah.
And you just hit the DVD and Blu-ray display in the back corner.
Yeah.
One pack of light bulbs, you know, just in case. You're always going to need them.
I was thinking you meant that, like, you just take every copy of Sequest and put that in, and they're like, yeah, Christmas presents for everyone.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, man, if your family didn't decide that, like, we weren't doing Christmas presents, we're just doing, like, a game exchange, we should have got everyone a Blu-ray of Sequest. Everyone gets the same one.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
It's my Seth Cohen starter pack.
Yeah?
Yeah. I would also put in a copy of Death Cab.
Sure, sure, naturally.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, why didn't they ever perform on Sequest?
On Sequest? Because they didn't exist yet.
That's no excuse. It takes place in 2032.
Well, maybe they need to go to the bait shop. So,
anyway, yeah. As I was saying, if you're depending on what release you're watching, if you're watching, you can see as Lucas gets up and turns around, there is a stitch down the center of the frame. They're doing some Parent Trap shit.
Yeah.
And I don't know if these are just two takes. Or
you questioned if they were even the same
room. I questioned if this was just shot two separate times with stand-ins and they stitched them together. Because it's not like they shake hands, you know,
no,
or anything.
They do stay far apart. But I go with takes.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it could be a take thing, but
like,
I don't know. It's weird.
I mean, looking at Michael Ironside talking about the show, he keeps it as a point of pride that he insisted when he had to act against Roy Scheider that he stay and do the shot and the reverse shot with him.
Yeah.
As well as, you know, the wide, the coverage.
Yeah.
And maybe Jonathan Brandis didn't make that same insistence. I don't know.
This one would be weird, though, because there are a lot of scenes of them together where they're very close shots
mm-hmm.
where that would make sense. But this is like a far away shot,
yeah.
which does make it weird if, like... Mm-hmm. how would you have a stand-in for that?
Something got stitched for some reason. Like, you can visually see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a weird little dude. So, yeah. Bridger's all, you know, I never thought we'd see this day, Lucas. And Lucas is like, well, you always taught me to think for myself.
Mm-hmm.
To, you know, stand up for what I think is right and believe in, which includes questioning you.
Yeah. Like, this is one of my favorite episodes if I'm thinking of the show in terms of the found family.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's really ending that arc, because to be a man, you must recognize that your father is but a mortal man.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the final step on the journey. And that's what this episode is about.
Yeah. You know, so much of Lucas in the show is him wanting to be treated as an adult. Oh, you're not older. He's a fucking adult.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's in the fucking Navy.
Like it or not, big guy.
Right? And he's being treated the same.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, you don't know what you're talking about. You're not... And if anything, even worse, because his word would have been trusted back then.
Yeah, I was going to say,
backtracked it out.
Is he misreading the situation? This is how Bridger treats so-called scientists we think are idiots.
Yeah.
Like, this is how...
Yeah.
Maybe it's a little bit of a be careful what you wish for, Lucas.
Because
he is not taking the kids' feelings into account like he did so often before.
And it's just, when you really stop, though, and think about the fact that Bridger didn't even know he joined.
Yes.
He left the boat and never called to check in, never stayed in touch.
Hey, phones go both ways.
Be the adult. Be the fucking adult. But like, that's crazy, right? Like, it's just when you think about, like, I don't know, I think that perspective, and just like, okay, now he's suddenly there, and it's like all the feelings, all the emotions that Lucas has been having to deal with, and the fact that he's been abandoned. It's crazy.
So
Bridger goes back to his boat.
He's got to engage in this blockade.
Yes. So they try to move. They get in the way.
Hudson plays very gentle chicken, and they move to stop him. So he's like, all right, Mr. Piccolo, three EMP torpedoes. Let's light them up.
And what I love is Hudson is the one to launch them. Because this is the first act against Bridger. And he doesn't actually ask anyone else to do it.
Right. He
doesn't say it.
It takes a full team to make it happen, but he pushes the button.
And he doesn't say anything about it, but he never, like, says, like, here, let me, you know, do that for you so you don't... Like, he just does it, which I think is a really interesting thing, because there's so many moments throughout this episode where Hudson is trying to protect them all.
Mm-hmm.
In different ways.
And he even explains himself to the bridge unprompted, which is very un-Hudson of him. Like, hey, I'm just shooting to disable their screws. We just got to sail around them. That's all.
That's it. They'll be totally fine. We're not going to hurt them.
And it's three direct hits, one each, and does exactly that on two of them.
Yeah, because Bridger's ship apparently has some shields.
Yeah, he knew he was going to face off against Sequest.
He knows Sequest.
So
Lucas is like, yeah, this was his boat, sir. He knows.
And now it's his turn to play very serious chicken. He is barreling nose to nose against Sequest.
Yes. And so they are on a collision course with each other, neither backing down. Until the moment when what Bridger actually wanted to do was get close enough to get in between them and a whisker. And he peels off.
And so it looks like he blinked and Ford's like, wow, I never expected that to happen. And
really what he's doing is fucking with that whisker.
Right.
To mess with their magnetic drive.
But Hudson's explanation is, well, he just loves this damn boat so much.
Yeah. Can't hurt it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what he did with the whisker is fucking with the boat. Everything's rattling now. And they're like, oh,
power
shit.
Systems are shutting off. Propulsion is down.
We got to shut everything down and be dead in the water because of this problem that's suddenly happening. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. So they do. And then they are hailed by Bridger, who gloats.
Yeah.
Because he's like, I built it. I know how to disable it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You turn it on, I'll just turn it right back off again another way. You know I can. You know I'll do it.
Mm-hmm. And Lucas is very offended by all this. And he's like, wait, so we listened to you and we disagreed. And this is what you're doing. You're having a fucking temper tantrum, basically.
Yeah.
And you're responding this way.
Mm-hmm.
It's fucking bullshit.
Like I said earlier about how 2032 treats Bridger, like, these are elements of Bridger that we saw occasionally, but it was usually in an episode about him, like, getting over it, and West Phalen would be like, hey, Nate, come on.
Yeah.
you can be a better person than this. I don't see her around.
Yeah. Like, Dr. Joe Hansen isn't like that.
No.
What was her name?
I can't remember if it's a hard or soft J, but it's one of those.
Johansson?
Yeah. But like, yeah, the things that make Bridger an antagonist, sometimes even villainous in this episode, are things that were always there, but they're just coming to the surface so much more than they did back then.
Yeah.
He could be a petty guy. He could be a petty guy.
Yeah. Well, and now it's all directed at them.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? It's fine when it's directed at, like, someone else.
Let's just say, throwing ideas out. What if there was an ocean scientist who had some good ideas but went, say, too far and then faked their own death?
Yeah.
And now they're back causing some kind of problems.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen the show do that before. What an interesting idea.
You know what would have been insane? Is this during his, like, Lucas, I'm so disappointed in you. Now I'm going to go behind everyone and be like, you know who I ran into, Ford? I recently had lunch with the regulator, Leslie. You remember him? And Lucas is just there like, what the fuck?
You're friends now?
You're getting lunch with him? But I'm just over here and you haven't talked to me.
Malcolm moved on to porpoises. We don't have anything to talk about anymore.
So they cut communications with him, and Hudson goes to Lucas. And I was like, how well do you know this ship? Well enough. I could fix this problem.
He did manually check every circuit in the whole submarine that one time.
He did. He has seen every inch of this boat at this point.
That might be paying off, you know?
So while Lucas is crawling through tubes to fix shit, Ford notifies Hudson that things are getting worse. It has increased by 13%.
The zone of infection has increased, yes.
Does not look like it's burning out. Looks like Bridger is fucking wrong.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So while Lucas is crawling around in the tubes, he gets on his little handheld communicator and is like, all right, I figured out what happened. He rascaled us through a whisker. I just gotta, like, find the specific fault to fix it.
Yeah.
And he does. He does good job.
And he reconfigures it so, like, Bridger can't do it again.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And as he's coming back from his work, Hudson's like, yeah, I know this is really hard for you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is. Gonna go to my station now. Because what the fuck do you say to that? Like, yep.
And so Hudson is continuing this, like, battle of tactics against Captain Nathan Bridger, the guy who was so good at tactics they cloned his brain that one time in a computer.
Mm-hmm.
And his plan is, he won't be expecting us to fix this ship so good so fast. Let's pretend we're not fixed yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we're gonna fucking laser them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And O'Neill's like, wait, no, like, this is Captain Bridger. He's our friend. He's not a hostile. Like, he's family. We shouldn't, like, shoot at him. And Hudson's like, well, he wasn't a hostile until he became hostile at us. So
when you disable a boat to interfere with their mission, you become a target. We're going to shoot to disable with the lasers this time. Your objection is noted, Mr. O'Neill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now we have a bit of a change here because he does tell Piccolo to fire, mm-hmm. right? Like, mm-hmm. he tried to protect them the first time, but, like, they all are having to come to terms with what is going on.
Bridger shot first.
Yep.
With an information packet attack, but he shot first in Hudson's mind. This is, like, the rules of engagement are clear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, technically, though, like, Hudson shot first, but, like...
with the torpedoes.
Yeah. With the EMPs, but, like...
Did you ever notice that in the entire run of Sequest DSV, Captain Bridger never touches a gun? He never touches a gun. That was important to him. That his character never...
he touches a gun.
When does he touch a gun?
Oh, it's a harpoon. It doesn't count.
He never touches a gun. In fact, at one point, one of the writers that came on for season two was like, I've noticed this. I know this about Roy Scheider and how he conceives of the character. I'm going to write in a scene where he takes a gun away from someone to tell him, you know, no, son, that's not how we solve our problems around here. And Roy Scheider looked at those pages and he walked up to a producer and said, you got to rewrite this. I'm not going to touch a gun, even to take it away from someone.
Oh.
And so he got the rewrite.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, hey, you don't remember that scene, do you? It doesn't exist. They didn't shoot it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, they fire, and Bridger's ship, the systems are all crashing. They're dead in the water. Like, they're fine. They're alive. There's life support. But they can't go anywhere.
No one is happy. No one here is happy. Hudson's not even happy, but he is, again... making his case to the assembled crew that his actions are just.
Bridger, like, radios that, like, you're making a mistake and, like, yelling at him. And he's like, you left me no choice, and hangs up the call.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, he didn't have a choice. Like, Bridger's playing dirty.
Again, like, it's we're talking about this in character terms, right? The two captains, the broken father-son relationship, but... what the stakes are, what matters is this mutating pathogen that might destroy all life everywhere if we don't do something. It might not, but what are you willing to risk on a maybe? I don't know.
Yeah. So, now that that's taken care of, Lucas is, you know, working on his enzymes and stuff.
Yes, his enzymes.
His enzymes.
So this episode, I mentioned that SequestVault.com has a number of, like, ADR sessions archived from one of the ADR techs. That's true for a few episodes. This episode has 7 of those tapes. I've only listened to 2 so far. And the 2 I listened to are both Jonathan Brandis's sessions.
Yeah, because he can't say enzymes.
No, he keeps making it 2 M's. Enzyme.
Enzymes.
Over and over again. So one tape is just him doing this one line, which is just like rapid fire, really tight techno babble about these enzymes that keeps coming out as M-zymes, and he has to do it over and over again.
I can't judge the man, though.
No, absolutely.
You made me do that radio play thing. The eschatology in Genesis. Mm-hmm. I could not fucking say the name of the one character to save my fucking life.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
And I just kept re-saying it, and I literally could not hear the difference. I was sound blind to it. I had no idea what was happening. And you were like, that's wrong. I was like, what? How is it wrong? I don't understand.
But there is some fun stuff in there. In fact, right now, you're about to hear Jonathan Brandis do his Roy Scheider impression.
No. I don't say enzymes. This is Roy. You could... Listen, let me tell you something. You could take this page and shove it up your ass. I don't do this. Bring me to Century 3. Jesus Christ. I'm doing my looping in Maui, okay? You could take the word enzymes... and you can shove it up your ass.
Oh, good God.
No. Back in Manhattan 25 years ago, sure, maybe. Yeah, you know, I said enzymes all the time. I don't need to say enzymes now. Here we go.
Please, ladies and gentlemen.
Please. Jesus Christ. Shove it up your ass.
212, take 11.
You can take this dialogue about fish. You can shove it up your ass.
I just love it when you do Roy. I'm telling you.
Fuck this. I ain't coming down here to do looping for you. Okay?
No. You gotta do
you, the... I'll be in my trailer. Okay?
No, you gotta do the Roy. No.
Let me tell you something. You bring this mic, okay? After you shove it up your ass, you bring this mic and this equipment.
Okay.
And bring it to my trailer.
Now that we've got you totally out of the groove here.
And we'll loop while I'm taking a shit. That's what we'll do, okay? And if you don't like it, shove it up your ass.
Fucking so, yeah. Lucas is working on that stuff. It's all, like, ready to go. The doctor's there, like, supporting him.
Mm-hmm. And so, basically, they just hit the big red button.
Yep.
Figuratively, there isn't a big red button. But, hey, how about they rigged up a science lab again?
Yeah!
How about that?
Yeah!
It's on C-Deck and everything.
It's nice. and so... Lucas predicts that, like, in the next couple of hours, they'll see progress, and then, like, it should take, you know, a few weeks for everything to go back to normal. But, like,
mm-hmm.
we'll see results pretty quickly.
And as they leave, Lucas has the captain alone in the most beautiful hallway in television,
mm-hmm.
and is like, hey, since the mission's going all right, can you sign off on sending some of our... sending a rescue crew over to Bridger's sub? That'd be great. And Hudson's like, yeah, we're gonna do that. That's fine.
Yeah. And then goes into a story.
He tells a little story about his old man, the pool shark.
And when he also realized that, you know, his old man was human like the rest of us.
Yeah.
And it one made
day,
him pretty angry.
He beat his dad at pool. He was in the zone, ran up... basically ran the board on him and was so confused and like mad at himself that he wasn't living with the god of pool, but just, you know, a guy. It turns out his father is just a guy.
Yeah. And so yeah. He's like,
pivotal point in a young man's life.
So hang in there, Wallencheck. It happens to all of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Lucas is on VidLink to Bridger, probably because he was telling him about, you know, hey, we're going to send some stuff over to you.
And also, but, like, enzymes in the water, where we're expecting real good results, because that's what the conversation's about.
Yeah, it's not going well. It's not a good conversation.
He insists that this short-term solution will be a long-term disaster, just like the thing that brought them here in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Like a remember this when everyone's dead and dying.
Yeah.
Later, Lucas.
Yeah, he's not holding back at all.
And Lucas, like, snaps.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, is it such a problem that, like, I might have been right, like, once?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't be right about this? They have a whole, like, where Bridger's like, you know, you should have trusted me. Well, you should have trusted me. And he's like, I did. Once.
Oh,
basically long ago, and
yeah,
I don't trust. Yeah. The trust is gone.
Trust is gone.
Just see all the, like, threads of family breaking.
You find a biological grandson, and your computer boy is just nothing to you anymore.
You leave him for your adopted son. Like, fuck. And so, what does Lucas do when he is sad?
What does he do? Where does he go?
He goes to the moon pool to spend time with Darwin being sad. And let me tell you, I needed this in my life.
Mm-hmm.
It is so... It's so heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Because he is sitting there...
If they had Lucas's cool room from season one as a set, he'd be there.
Yes.
And Darwin would be in the tube.
Yes. But they don't. So he is sitting on the floor of the moon pool... looking into the water, and Darwin's just there. And it's this really wide shot. Well, pretty wide compared to a lot of the shots we have on the show. And just, like, this, like, kind of isolation of it with him there.
Mm-hmm.
But
isolation doesn't last forever.
Well, first, Darwin is like, hey, Lucas, why are you sad?
Yeah.
I'm not sad. I'm frustrated. Well, what's frustrated?
Mm-hmm.
And he tries to explain... about, like, oh, like, it's when you try to catch a fish and it gets away. And Tarwin's like, fuck that. I catch all my fish. I'm not some loser who can't catch fish.
I love every time someone tries to explain a problem they're having to Darwin, and his response is, I don't have that problem. Bye. Have you tried not sucking about it? I'm a dolphin. Fuck you.
I am an award-winning fish catcher. What the fuck are you talking about?
All those sharks outside, I killed them.
Those orcas is actually me.
I did it. I mutated the strain, Lucas. It was me all along. Greatest hunter of all time, Lucas.
Darwin was like the evil, the evil mastermind of everything. Every time, though, he's like, nah, I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know what you're talking about. I do backflips. Yeehaw. But they are joined. This duet becomes a trio.
Yes. Tim comes to join him.
Because, quote, figured this is the one place Hudson wouldn't be.
And you know what? You are so right.
There is a metatextual line running through this episode. This is an episode of Sequest about Sequest.
Mm-hmm.
Because he settles down and asks Lucas, hey, remember when working on the ship was an adventure?
No, wasn't it? It was just a job and not an adventure. And Lucas says, it was always an adventure.
Right, yeah.
It's just a little bit different now.
Yeah.
Then that's like, Lucas is like, yeah, and Bridger's even different too. Like, everything's different. And Tim's like, nah.
No, he's the same. We've changed. Looks directly at the camera.
And Lucas asks the question, why does he still treat me like a kid? And he's like, I don't know. But Lucas gets called away.
Well, also, O'Neill says, sometimes I think Hudson treats me the same way.
Yeah.
You're just a weird little nerd. You're just a weird little nerdo.
Well, if you think about it, Tim hasn't had a moment to like show Hudson who he is.
This is Tim O'Neill's biggest. This episode has his biggest moments of the year.
Yeah,
and we're most of the way through the year.
I feel like most all the, like, you know, Ford had his moment. Lucas has had his moments. Tony had his
Tony's
like,
his special boy.
Yeah. Like, people, Dagwood had his moments. Tim has never had something.
He destroyed the president.
Yeah. And you look at, like, Hudson was really hard on Lucas for a long time, but then they, like, went through some shit together and, like, he respects him.
A way to win. Captain Hudson's respect is to stand up to him and make your case. And maybe, after this episode, after this mission, Tim O'Neill is going to find Hudson respects him a little more.
Because he stood up to him,
yes.
Even though he was wrong?
Yes.
Well, you weren't right, Tim, but, like, good job.
He might have been right.
Somewhat, but, like... Hudson got ahead and do what he had to do.
The facts are not all on his side, sure, but he could have been a kind of right.
Yeah. Like, I just have to say, this episode was written for, like, fan fiction writers, let me tell you.
Yeah.
The angst.
Because it's all about character dynamics.
It's all about character dynamics. It's all about relationships. It's all about crippling disappointment. Feeling inadequate.
Yeah,
questioning...
Yeah.
The love of your family or found family, and do they even exist anymore?
I mean, yeah, you frame that shot with Lucas all alone in the moon pool, you're like, oh, wow, the live journalers are going to eat
they
this one up.
They ate it up.
Yeah.
My God. They were like, finally. This is what we've been waiting for.
It's been so long since he fell asleep in the stinger. We need another iconic Lucas visual.
Yeah. And being sad in the moon pool. With Darwin being like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Have you tried not being sad? Be a dolphin. It rules.
You never don't catch fish. We're really good at that.
I'm so fast compared to a fish. I wish I could remember which episode this was, but I'm feeling more and more confident that Darwin perceives of human beings as defective dolphins.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's just his lens on the world.
Like when Darwin was like bringing Lucas fish, trying to feed him.
Yes.
Here you go. None of you know how to take care of yourself. Like, never seen any of you catch a fish. Are you all okay?
So the people say their piece and get back to work, but the camera goes back out into the sea.
Yeah.
And sees this floating cloud of microbe and zooms in and zooms in, and there's fully CGI microbe vision.
Yeah.
And they jiggle and they mutate further. Oh no!
Ooh. But we don't know this is happening yet. Only we know, they don't know. Because Lucas is telling McGath, yeah, the water within the zone is like got safe readings. Things seem good.
Yeah, things are looking good. And McGath's like, I don't know, I'm very worried about Nathan's feelings. I care so much about him personally as a friend. We go way back.
And Lucas is like, fuck that at this point.
Why does... This is really the one character thing I don't buy in this episode. Like, when has McGath ever cared about someone being too hard on Bridger? That was your whole job. Your whole job was abdicating responsibility, so he had to do it for you. Yes. He sucked so much in season two. He was a bad man.
He misses that. He misses when it was Bridger. Felt it was easier than getting Hudson to lay down. Like, Hudson's just like, fine, I quit. I'm gonna, go do a thing. So, they get off with him. Lucas is like, hey, let's head back to, this part of the zone so we can do more readings. And Henderson gets a little, hey, you got, a little blip here.
Yeah, there's a little warning light she wants to check out.
Yeah, so she goes to do that.
With Dagwood in tow to help with the lifting and the stretching.
Yeah, there's some...
She doesn't need a stepladder if she has a Dagwood.
There's some pressure fluctuations in the hall that they got to check out. See if it's okay. And as Dagwood opens up a panel...
There's a little drip, drip, drip. And then there's more drips.
And then there's a whoosh.
There's a whole shower pouring down on them.
There's a waterfall.
Yeah.
Then they got a full hull breach going on.
Because something is eating the synth bio skin of Sequest.
Yeah,
that's no good.
Yeah.
And as soon as they realize this, alarms are going off. Everything's shaking. The camera goes sideways as we get an exterior shot of the Sequest listing.
Yes, it's making it flip. And so then there's also a really cool shot where, Ford is activating, the ballast tanks, and, you get to actually see that outside. There's some cool, CGI here of the ship that we've never seen before.
Also, while Ford is pushing the buttons, Hudson bracing himself against a console looks like he's just shoving the ship back upright.
Yes, he's like, I will do this myself.
And it seems to work.
Yeah, so shit's going down. Stuff is escalating. Lucas is looking at readings, confirming that the bioskin is rupturing.
Because what has happened is the enzyme has triggered a further mutation of this Firma strain that will not only affect marine mammals, but also Lonnie Henderson and our good friend Dagwood.
As the doctor also tells us, because she's like, hey, we got them. They're not good. Things are bad.
And the Sequest itself is infected with the death virus.
Yeah. It's now, instead of just sticking to some life, it's now all life. It's really bad.
Look who fucked up. You fucked up. You fucked up now. Oh my god, you fucked up.
He knows. You don't have to rub it in.
He really, really knows.
He really knows. He kind of has a lot going on right now. Be nice. They need to find out more about this microbe and what the fuck's going on. So Ford and Lucas put on some hazmat suits.
Not just any hazmat suits. These are the same suits, or at least the same helmets they used to go into the ancient alien spacecraft. Back in season one.
Yeah.
This was, O'Neill and Crocker and Krieg going around in the spaceship.
And so they are up in, again, another really cool spot that we haven't seen before, where it's they're walking between maybe, I guess you could consider like the skeleton of the ship and the skin, the bioskin. It's like the attic.
Yeah. The attic. Yes. The ship's attic.
And so like they're walking through there and you're seeing the like, you know, illuminating patterns of the bioskin above them. It's neat.
And it looks diseased.
Yeah, it doesn't look good.
It looks infected. There's those nice, smooth, modeled patterns we've seen in the CG exteriors are grimy and, like, it's oozing a little bit, and no one likes to see that.
No. It's not good. So yeah, Lucas is like, this is bad, because, like, if more of it gets affected, we're not going to be able to handle the water pressure, like, at all.
Which is bad when you're a submarine.
So meanwhile, Bridger over on his disabled sub is like, I gotta go find something that might help with this, so I'm gonna take a shuttle and just go, like, look.
There's gotta be something in this environment that can help. He has faith in nature to heal itself. His assistant, who was killed by the demon in Pandora's box. Johansson,
I don't remember what her fucking name is.
Says, that's a great idea, bud, but our shuttle can't handle it. This ain't the Sequest shuttle.
And he's like, eh, whatever.
Yeah, I gotta try, because he's a fucking hero.
So back on the Sequest, Freddy is updating Hudson on what's going on. There's more infected. We're gonna, you know, keeping looking for stuff, blah, blah, blah. And then
there's a plink and a
pssst. And Sheila, they like jump out of the way and just miss some water.
And then they run and jump because an automated voice comes on to say, hey, bulkhead sealed to quarantine this section.
They're like, oh, fuck.
They do the run and dive and whew, just made it.
Yep. And Hudson's like, okay, that's good. I'm gonna head off in this direction. And as soon as he's out of the area, Freddy gets caught in another breach.
Freddy gets wetty.
Yeah.
Wetty Freddy.
Yeah, it's not good. She's probably gonna, you know, be sick in like 2 seconds.
So, yeah, the doctor is in this episode again. 2 weeks in a row with the doctor. Yay, doctor.
She's in this episode a lot.
A lot.
She gets speaking parts many times.
Mostly talking about how overwhelmed she is. And like, the...
Everyone's dying, and I don't know what to do.
The medical infrastructure of Sequest was not built to sustain this many active cases. There aren't enough beds. There isn't space. There isn't medicine. Of course there isn't medicine. This is an incurable so far disease. What do we fucking do?
Well, and she's like trying to like communicate with other, like, I don't know, I guess like the Navy medical people on shore, like, send me another like crew, like we can't do this. And they're like, well, we can't send anyone in, you're in a contamination zone. And she's like, yeah, and we can't leave. Give me a few hours. Let me figure something out. She's like, we don't have a few hours.
I'm gonna collect some people to get on a video call and help you out. Like, we don't got time for that.
Like, everyone's dying. This is not good.
The guy on the call here is credited as UEO Surgeon General, and he is played by Robert Small, who previously played Dr. Roberts in The Siamese Dream. Does this mean the psychic cyborg with blue blood is exerting some sort of influence on the UEO 2032? One of his handpicked doctors is now Surgeon General.
Maybe.
Maybe!
That's a maybe.
That one's a maybe! You think they... I mean, clearly, they just ran out of Central Florida character actors.
Yeah.
But sometimes they line up in fun ways.
So meanwhile, over in the wardroom, they're on a call with McGath, who is, you know, ringing Lucas a new one about, like, how did you not notice this?
Yeah, how did you not see this coming? Look what happened. The spread of this pathogen now gives them 12 hours until it makes landfall. Mm-hmm. And that means getting into the human food chain, getting into the water supply for who knows how many hundreds of years. It could lie dormant in an aquifer of death.
Yeah. And so Hudson is like, well, if we can't neutralize it, we gotta destroy it. So we need to nuke the contamination zone. Mm-hmm. And Ford's like, wait, but we're in the contamination
zone. But Black Dynamite, I'm in the contamination zone.
And Hudson's like, yeah, I didn't stutter. That's it. That's what we're doing.
They someone points out to him there's 200 souls aboard Sequest. And again, just like Chains of Command, count the lives. Just count them up on one side and the other.
This or the world.
That's do the math, man.
And so McGath is like, okay, I will have a missile ready in 10 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you all for dying for the world.
Yeah. This ends with Hudson thanking McGath for his, like, clear-headed decision-making. And McGath ends with, like, no, thank you.
Thank you all.
Yeah. It's not only just like Chains of Command, it's just like that thing in 2012. Yeah. Just that thing 20 years ago.
And so then, like, they get off the call, and, like, they all sit down around the table, and Lucas is immediately looking at his watch as, like, Ford and Hudson are there, like, letting it settle. And Lucas is like, okay, we got, like, 10 hours. I got another sample. Like, I just got to get Bridger. He knows a lot about stuff. We can work together.
Let's
we can
collaborate. Figure something compare out. Notes. Let's go.
And Hudson has this moment where he glances at Ford and then looks back at Lucas and is like, absolutely, get working on that. And it's such a, like, it's again one of those moments where you get so much from Hudson about how, like, supportive he is of the crew. Like, he can't tell Lucas no.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably not going to work and we're probably all going to die.
And unlike Chains of Command, I don't think he's giving the kid busy work to keep his mind off it. I think he believes.
Yes.
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 I don't know how much, I don't know where he'd place the odds, but like, he means it.
Yes. Like, I think he's like, yes, do it. If anyone's going to figure something out, you will. Mm-hmm. But also, like, I'm not going to say don't get your hopes up.
Right.
Like, I'm still accepting the fact I'm probably going to die in 10 hours, but like, yes.
So Lucas calls up Bridger's sub and is like, hey, Bridger, let's work on this. And Dr. Johansson picks up the vid call and is like, actually, he's not here. He was headed for the nearest trench. Because some things never change.
And then he finds out what ship Bridger was in and he's like, what the fuck?
You let him go in that death trap? You can't go to a trench? A trench?
And so then he fills her in on, hey, a nuke's coming, so you need to leave. Give me those coordinates. I'm going to go find his ass. And he does. He goes down the trench. He finds the shuttle. There are a lot of air bubbles coming out of the shuttle.
That's too many bubbles.
That
air should be on the inside. You want it on the inside.
Not on the outside. It's bad. And so when he calls to Bridger.
Mm-hmm.
Bridger's sick. Bridger has definitely taken on water.
That's a very sweaty man.
Yeah.
And you know what that means on television? A very sick man.
And so Lucas luckily had a bio suit with him.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they connect and he goes on board and they have a little fight.
Yeah, like now we're at the point where they see themselves as peers,
yes.
as like adult humans.
Yes.
And find themselves both principled and both very, very stubborn.
Yes. You know, a bit of like, why couldn't you trust me? Why'd you want me to do, you know, put millions of people's lives on there? Why'd you want me to do that?
Neither of them could stake that many lives on faith in the other. It had to be their solution.
Yes. And Lucas does get a little jab in, though, that, like, you know, you thought your son died, so you turned your back on everything, and then you thought Sequest changed, so you left.
Mm-hmm. Oh. You should have given him a heads up before you made the big speech, Nate. You should have given him a heads up. That was dirty. You did him dirty.
Bridger has this moment where he's like, well, I have my beliefs. And Lucas is like, yeah, and I have mine. They're just not the same as yours anymore.
It's the anymore that gets you, right?
Oh.
He's his own man now. He's not just a baby Bridger.
But then they kind of cool down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, say all the words they need to say.
Because there's a tube.
Yes.
There's a green tube.
They're like, you know, we need a third option. We need to figure something else out. And Bridger's like, hey, I found this stuff down here. He found some algae.
He found some algae that significantly is not dead. There must be some sort of natural immunity in this algae, and perhaps, Lucas reasons, he can use that as a template to reprogram his synthetic antigen. Yeah. And just do his plan again, but better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they're like, cool, let's go. Let's get back to the Sequest. We can make this work.
It's all about magic algae, just like Darwin's mom used to make.
Yeah.
Aw, yeah. Yum.
Yeah. Maybe they should have just asked Darwin, hey, any magical seaweed around?
It's true. He never has problems. Therefore, he has all solutions. It's only logical.
So back on the Sequest, Ford goes to the med bay to see Henderson.
Yeah, med bay, which is, what, like 8 crew quarters now, the full mess hall, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he is in the plastic zone. Everyone has this plastic sheeting tent around them.
Very
E.T.
Everyone's unconscious. And he grabs Henderson's hand, which I'm just over here like,
don't touch that.
Don't touch that. I really...
You're not supposed to touch
like,
that.
I don't think you should. Like,
he's going to die in 6 hours no matter what. The nuke is coming.
I guess.
What's the worst that could happen? A nuke is coming.
This is true. So Henderson, as I said, is unconscious. So he is just talking to her. And he starts talking about how he had a girlfriend in high school who they, you know, parted ways after high school. He went to the academy, she went to college, and like a couple of years after that, he found out that she was married, and it like gutted him because he realized he loved her and he never like acknowledged that or said that to her. And he's like, I don't want to do that again.
Does it count if she's asleep?
And so
it counts to me though, because I watch this and I go, oh, but also don't touch that.
He's like, I love you and I'm not letting you go. And I'm like, maybe you should let her go a little bit right now, but this is really sweet, and like, tell her again when she's awake.
If she's awake, the nuke is coming. She has an incurable disease.
But then they are interrupted. Their moment is interrupted by O'Neill.
Yeah. He makes a very telling announcement that all senior crew who are able are to report to the bridge. The little caveat, the little parenthetical there.
Hudson's gonna give his speech that like, hey, everyone, we're gonna die. I got no comforting words, but we started this together, we're gonna end it together.
Yeah, he's got the big speech before self-annihilation.
Yeah.
This episode is also interested in the limits of Hudson. Like, his only tool to solve a problem is weapons and the threat presented by weapons.
Yeah.
He doesn't know shit about kelp. He does not recognize the power of algae.
He cannot help with the enzymes or anything. He does not know about this. He's like, yeah, Lucas, it's all on you, bud.
He can't hack a whisker. Like, he can't think outside the... He cannot think outside the gun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
After Hudson gives his speech over the radio, we cut to McGath, who has gotten notice that the warhead is ready. And so he tells them to proceed and launch. And then we cut to Lucas and Bridger in the shuttle, and they get, like, the automated, like, announcement that's like, hey, everyone in this vicinity, a nuke is coming, get out. And Lucas is like, fuck. So he radios the Sequest and is like, hey, I'm coming back with Bridger. Wow, little deja vu there. But I'm coming back with Bridger. And we got this algae, and we're gonna try to do a thing, and I think I can save us all.
And Hudson, like, to his credit, is like, yes, algae plan, we're doing that now.
Lucas says there's an algae plan, there's an algae plan. Hey, McGath, we got an algae plan. Like, stop the nuke.
And I love that the Secretary General of the UEO has to tell his top captain, that's not how nuclear warheads work. There's no take-backsies, Oliver. You don't just, that's not how it works.
And what I think's funny is, like, Hudson and Ford are like, ah, you thought we'd scare. Like, they take it as, like, an insult. And it's like, no, that's just seriously, like,
that
not
they
how
wouldn't
it works.
Commit honorable seppuku.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so then Hudson's like, fine, I'll handle this with guns.
So because all of the sub-fighter pilots are down with the sickness, ooh-ah-ah-ah, he has to get in a fighter himself, like the good old days.
And so he heads out in a Spectre to deal with a warhead, while Lucas comes on board and works on antigens with the doctor, mm-hmm. which they test into Bridger, because, like, well, it's either this or we all die. So, like, guinea pig.
And look at all those green sacks. Sacks of goo.
Yeah.
Goo sacks.
Good goo sacks.
Good goo. It's a good green.
Things seem to be working on Bridger. So they are. So
immediately go to the, like, 3D printer and like, make as much as they can.
Go.
Now, why in the world would this missile launched from a base up through the atmosphere then spend the last several miles underneath the sea?
This is what happens.
Why would that be the case? Why is that the flight plan?
This is what happens a lot, actually. I feel like they've had other things come to them that have been, like, traveling forever underwater.
That's not how it was in the sincerest form of flattery. Those missiles sailed over the sea.
Maybe it's just because they don't want to scare people.
Okay, sure.
We're hiding it.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a PR issue.
Yeah.
Well, this is what allows Hudson to, like, try and shoot a torpedo at the missile until O'Neill's like, do not shoot a torpedo at the missile.
It will blow up.
You will die so bad.
Okay, fine. I'll use a laser.
So yeah, he does this, like, S swerve to get an intercept angle from the side and just slices it in half with his pulse lasers. It's very cool.
Yes. And so he has success, and Lucas disperses all the stuff into the water, and they're having success, and things are looking good. And Hudson comes back to the boat, to medbay, and Lucas is there next to Bridger, and Bridger is looking so much better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so the captains are face to face, and Hudson looks down at him and says, you're a stubborn man, Nathan. And Bridger looks back up and says, and what does that make you?
Yeah. And then we go check in on Henderson as Ford comes up to her bed and grabs her hand and holds it to her his chest.
And it's okay now because she's not infectious.
Yes. She was, like, as he was coming in, like, eating lunch. And I do think it's funny that apparently hospital, like, medbay lunch is different than, like, general Sequest lunch. Because she's like, ugh, it's so gross. Like,
it's a hospital food joke. You gotta make the hospital food joke.
But it would be the same food.
Maybe it's not. Maybe regular Sequest food is also gross. Creek thought so. He had a whole monologue about it.
But, so Ford is holding her hand and just looking at her with these eyes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's a little bit of a weird monologue, because she talks about how she was in a really, like, bad, lonely, dark place
mm-hmm.
in her fever, and I'm a little like, weren't you just unconscious? Like, I don't think you were aware.
Well, she was semi-conscious, I suppose, because she is talking to Ford as if she heard him.
Mm-hmm.
And responding to him, and they say to each other out loud and awake, I love you.
Yeah.
And I am crying.
Yeah.
I am reaching out to hold your hand as they hold each other's hands, which makes taking notes kind of hard.
Oh, it's kind of hard.
But she also is like, hey, why do I know the name of
Kim Nichols?
Kim Nichols, the high school sweetheart from his story. And why do I feel like I should write her a thank you note?
Duh.
It's a joke for the end, mm-hmm. but not quite the end.
No. So Darwin is out swimming and then comes back and he's like, hey, it's clean, but empty.
As the little text tells us, it's 2 weeks later.
Yes. They have the you know, mutant gent is gone, but they've also, like, kind of killed everything else in the area.
So that's the question. Life is possible here, but will it come back?
Yes. And, you know, kind of a, like, well, life finds a way, you know. We will see what nature does. And then Bridger. And this scene is Lucas and Bridger and Darwin.
Yes.
And Bridger is like, you know, Lucas, I'm not always right. I looked at your data, and, well, it was going to still kill itself off. It was going to take a lot longer than I initially thought.
Yeah.
And wasn't going to die. We would have
lost a whole coastline if we didn't take some sort of positive action.
Yeah. So, like, sometimes action is needed. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Bridger's like, or Darwin's like, hey, you're going to stay? You're going to stay and swim with me?
And he says no.
Because he's going to abandon his other child.
He has to continue on his son quest and doing ecological missions with this mini fleet of his.
Yes.
Which I guess is part of looking for Robert. And whatever, it's fine.
I mean, yeah, he's like, yeah, I gotta go find Robert.
Maybe he'll find me. Like, oh, why do you think that? Why wouldn't he all the years in between? What does this mean?
But he is like, you know, and when I do find him, I think you two should meet. You'd have a lot in common.
I like that, but I've never liked the idea that Robert could be alive.
No.
And if he's alive, what is keeping them apart?
Yeah.
They never try to answer that question because there's no good answer. It's a bad question.
They try to get into, like, some conspiracy thing. Mm-hmm. That's where you're going, you know. It's like, it's some conspiracy thing that he has to be in hiding. But it doesn't make any sense.
Right.
And it's
weird.
He
was out in the world enough to drop off his son at an embassy.
Yeah. So it's weird. But in this scene, it is like a... You know, he's extending a hand to Lucas.
Right, right.
Of like, I want you two to meet. You're both important people to me type thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And Lucas is like, yeah, I like that. Like, it's a sweet moment between them, even though you're questioning, like, what the fuck, dude?
Mm-hmm. So that's the end point we leave them on. They have, like, these are two peers in the ocean science community.
Yeah.
One Navy, one ex-Navy, and that is their relationship now. Yeah. That's where they are.
Really like this episode. I like this episode so much.
Yeah.
It's good.
It's good.
It's so good. I mean, it's getting back to things that we needed to get back. Like, we needed closure, right? In some of these moments. Yeah. Also, to finally see, like, I don't know, I think I would have liked Lucas screaming his head off at Bridger a bit more, but, like, we needed something, right? We needed the opportunity for them to go head-to-head a bit. And then, I love carrying Hudson. Mm-hmm. Hudson caring for everyone is, like, my favorite.
And, like...
For being a big, scary man, he's just a big, like... Squishy sweetheart.
There is a soft, chewy center in.
Yes, he's like a nerd's gummy cluster. Sharp on the outside, gooey on the inside.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah,
but encased in concrete. There's an even thicker, harder outside.
Well, it's the candy shell.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think, like, a thing I enjoy about the metatextual elements, the bits of this episode that are about Sequest and the transition to 2032 that I think work are that they point out there has been a change.
Yeah.
And the characters are kind of conflicted about that change. They are giving you, the viewer, a permission to feel like there is something lost in this change as we go on to these new adventures. And hey, the characters you like, your TV friends who you spend an hour with every week, are feeling it too. That's okay. Mm-hmm. They're with you, going on a journey with you.
Yeah.
They're not insisting, and this is awesome now, and we're not feeling complicated about it. That would really turn me off.
Yeah.
As a person who thinks it's awesome now, I wouldn't like that.
Yeah. I love season 3, but like an acknowledgement of it's different and it's hard and there's changes and there's highs and lows of it.
Mm-hmm.
I also love that we get back to science some in this episode. And I think it's actually, without giving spoilers, we get more of that in the rest of the season. And it's one of those things where I'm like, okay, it was never going to go back to being a science show like it was in the first season. Or like that they attempted at times, right?
Right.
Loose science. But I feel like there was a shift from this episode on that gives you some more of that. That like if the season wouldn't have been cut short and it would have finished out the season and you got a new one, where would it have gone with some of that?
Right, right.
Right? Especially as if you have Lucas taking on bigger roles, right? Still an ensign or expanding into a new role, and like you're, how does that shift? Do we embrace more of that?
Like, imagine a late season 3 or early season 4 episode.
Yeah.
Where Lucas is like, Captain, we need to put a science lab back in. Look at this mission, this mission, this mission. Right. And what could we have done with more and higher quality tools on board?
Yeah. More resources, actual places for me to do this research, the type of equipment needed, etc. And I think that would have been really great.
Yeah. And I think this swing comes from just like, look at what new writers came in for season 3. It's a lot of people who have history or futures in science fiction. And the writers that were around in season 2 but aren't anymore, that's not true of them.
Yeah.
It's a lot of like cop show people and like family or teen drama people.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, 21 Jump Street is both of those. But
yeah.
It's not sci-fi people.
Yeah. So, you got a fish fact?
I got a Hudson fact.
Okay. What's your Hudson fact?
So, Hudson Soft is the name of a Japanese game developer.
Okay.
Founded in 1973 as a radio equipment shop. It was just like these two guys that wanted to be a business, and it seemed like they did not care what business they were in.
They were just like, business, 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 business.
Like, I think they were going to start like a bakery or a coffee shop or something, but there was already a coffee shop in the building. So they're like, okay, we're a radio store now?
Because that's what you do.
That's what you do. I just wanted to be in business.
What's not here?
And so from being a radio store, they became a computer store, and then they became a computer, a software developer, and then that became games. Their first hit out in the world was Bomberman. Are you familiar with Bomberman?
No.
Okay, it's sort of an action puzzle thing.
Okay.
I think you might have liked Bomberman.
Okay.
They rode that for decades. They did lots of Bombermans.
Okay.
They're also responsible for the Bonk series. The game Sonic Shuffle,
okay.
The Bloody Roar series, that's a fighting game.
Okay.
And I think their biggest success was the Mario Party series.
Mm.
You're familiar with the Mario Party?
Yes.
Yes. They were acquired by Konami in the year 2011 and then fully absorbed into Konami Digital Entertainment the following year. Hudson Soft is no more.
Aww.
There's my Hudson fact.
There's your Hudson fact.
Have you got a fish fact, dude?
I got an algae fact.
Algae fact. The yes. Fish eat it. Is that the fact? Fish eat it.
No.
Okay.
So, there is a phenomenon called watermelon snow. Also sometimes called snow algae or blood snow.
Watermelon snow sounds like a Shel Silverstein poem to me.
Yeah. So there is a species of algae that loves ice and cold, which is very uncommon for fresh algae. It is known because, well, it's green algae, like under the microscope and whatnot. It has a secondary red pigment that is only activated by, like, basically, like, UV and, like, touch. So, like, if you were to walk on where it is, your footprint that was left behind would be red. And since it is in cold climates, it is traditionally on snow and ice.
Right.
So it basically looks like that scene from Star Wars.
Like the salt. Yeah.
But like
The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
Crete is the name of that planet, I think.
Yeah. And so the... Yeah, it looks like bloody snow.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
One of the things that's interesting is that... So for, like, basically the past 200 years, it's been associated that there's, like, this one specific type of algae that does this. But late, like, studies recently show that... most of this red snow is actually from a separate new genus of algae that contains two species.
Mm-hmm.
So, like...
Seedless and seeded.
Yeah. There's, like, more doing this than what they thought. But, yeah, the algae... This, like, red thing also... it talked like it can be, like, sunscreen for the algae. It, like, offers a protective coating.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then it also helps, like, it absorb heat, which, like... provides it with, like, liquid water and stuff to, like, continue to grow.
Yeah.
So, yeah. There you go.
Well, thank you for teaching me all about a bizarre strain of algae.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of algae out there.
There's so much algae out there.
There's so much algae.
Most of the world's oxygen, atmospheric oxygen, comes from algae.
Yeah.
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 Take that, rainforest.
Take, yeah. I think you're so great.
I also think it's so great, for the
you
record.
You are so great. We let love the record show. The rainforest.
I love the rainforest.
Love it. Think there
there's
should be more
so
of it.
So much algae. Yeah, you know what? We should have enough rainforest that algae starts getting nervous about wearing the crown, right?
Yeah, and they're like, no, you're coming for me.
Yeah. That's where I'm at.
Battle it out.
Whoever wins, we also win. I love a healthy, diverse biosphere.
Yes. That'd be good. So, with that, so, if you have enjoyed what you've heard today.
And who wouldn't, I have to say.
I mean, seriously. You should leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to us. And if it is 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, he'll read it.
I will. It's my favorite thing to do. I love it so much.
Yeah.
You can also go out into the world, tell the people in your lives, in your networks, in your Discords. It doesn't have to be face-to-face to be word of mouth. That is how we grow. That is how we find people. And it's how we all go down to the bottom of the sea where the Secretary General will fire a nuke at us together.
Together.
Yes,
like the LG. you can also follow us on Blue Sky. We are there as WSKRS Whiskers. It's lots of fun over there.
We're having a great time every single day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the ways we find people who are interested in our show but didn't know it existed until, you know, they found out.
Yeah.
And while we're at it, just check out Monkey Business. This is a great time of year for reading, for gifting books. And what's better than just like snuggling up under a throw blanket with a book when, you know, the sun sets before 5 p.m.? It's
only a couple more weeks, then the days are getting longer.
So close. We're so close.
Days will get longer again soon. It'll be fine. It'll be microscopic, but it'll be fine. Also, why has December felt like fucking February? It is so freaking cold here. This is not what December's been like for years.
Darwin swims where it's warm. I don't have that problem. Bye.
Fuck you, Darwin. So with that, I'm Elena.
I'm Grant, and in the words of Captain Oliver Hudson,
you're a stubborn man, Nathan.
Chick from the Orlando Ale House.
Look at these guys. They're
there. It's like when you go down to Church Street Station and you're chasing that chick from the Ale House, you know, the one with the really high bangs and the gold belt and the matching boots. And no matter how long you chase that piece of ass, you just don't get it. What you do get is VD. No, it's hypothetical. I was...
Look, we're with you. We're with you. I don't understand.
I didn't get... Who said I got VD from it? Did you say... Are you spreading that rumor?
Even if you did have the clap, we'd still love you.
Really?
Yeah.
Would you still love me if I had crabs?
Crabs really? Are nothing.
Have you ever had... I've never had crabs
yes,
myself.
Yes, I've had crabs.
So this is way too much more information than I want to know.
Well, what the fuck you asked me all this shit for?
Because I want to see if you have the audacity to answer, and you always do. You've had crabs?
Yeah.
Oh! You have. When'd you get them? College, right?
No, I didn't go to college. This is...
This is 3 weeks ago.
Wow.